Amy, on this podcast, we try to always offer useful takeaways. And if you learn nothing else from us, learn this useful parenting lesson by Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 are the ultimate parent hack, the best diaper to use as soon as your baby starts standing or walking. Instead of ordinary diaper tabs, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your wild child.
Pampers Cruisers 360 makes it so easy to change your baby. Who probably doesn't stop moving just because they need a diaper changed? Just slide on to apply and away they go.
And fear not, parents. Pampers Cruisers 360 offers an up to 100% leak-free fit. And they just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we say more?
For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand. Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupons, savings, and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
I'm here to kill the fun.
What fresh hell?
Laughing in the face of motherhood.
I'm going to baffle my children.
With Margaret Apples
and Amy Wilson.
You only get to have fun with Dad because he's a moron.
A podcast that solves today's parenting dilemmas
so you don't have to.
No is the default answer if the kids are asking a question.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood. This is Margaret.
And this is Amy. And today we're talking about good cop, bad cop parenting dynamics. Do we have them? Is it bad? What should we do about it?
Am I always bad cop? Am I ever good cop?
What is a bad cop? We'll talk about that. But first, I want to get to mailbag. We have a good mailbag this week.
Mailbag. That's our mailbag theme song.
Yeah, that's our mailbag.
Yeah, it needs work. I'm not saying, listen, we're spitballing. It's not a final. It's a draft.
For now, put that on our to-do list.
Nobody helped us.
We asked for help on it. Nobody's, if you were a musician, write us a mailbag theme. Valerie listened to our episode, I Figured Something Out, and she wrote in to say that she wanted to share something that she figured out. I wanted to share a system, Valerie says, that I lucked into in case it helps anybody else. Before spring break a few weeks ago, my two girls were at peak bickering and driving each other and us crazy. I was dreading being together 24/7 for a week, but we came up with the idea of sister points. The kids can only earn them together by being good sisters. At the end of the week, based on how many sister points they accrue, they can get a little money to buy, you know, a souvenir, she said, a little nonsense. This is way better, Valerie explains, than an individual reward system, which just leads to more fighting and more competitiveness.
Right.
Sister points worked really well and forced us to notice when the kids were being good and not just correcting them when they were being annoying. I love this.
Nailed it. Nailed it. Amazing.
This is such a good one. Thanks, Valerie, for writing that in.
Yeah, that's great. Smart.
So today we're talking about good cop versus bad cop. And as I started researching like what people have to say about this in parenting, I realized there are sort of different definitions of what it even means. So I want to like just make sure we're talking about the same thing out of the gate.
I'll take it.
All right. So like in law enforcement, right? Good cop, bad cop is a system of interrogating a witness where there's two cops who take turns and they're playing roles. And one of them is like, listen, Buster, you're going to go to jail for the rest of your life. I'm sending you up the river. And then the other person comes in and says, look, you know, he's a little hot-headed. Maybe we can come to an agreement. Right. But in this case, they're working together. Right. They're working together to trick somebody into giving them, you know, information that they want to confessing or whatever.
Yeah. And there's the Lego movie. Liam Neeson plays good cop, bad cop. And he's got a different face on either side of his head and he spins it around. Yeah. And it's a really solid joke. And I approve of it.
You know, Wikipedia made the point that the only problem with good cop, bad cop as an interrogation technique is that it's become something that's rather obvious. Now that's been in the Lego movie. You can kind of see it coming a mile away.
Right. You're like, no, I get what this thing is. I get it. I see. Now the next guy's going to come in and be nice to me. But I do think that when you've recently committed a major crime, maybe you're not sussing that out quite as well. You're kind of panicking probably at that point.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Your allostatic load is high.
Exactly. You're not necessarily being like, I saw this on SVU. You're like, oh no, I really shouldn't have robbed that bank.
But when it comes to parenting, you know, as I was looking at this, I'm like, this isn't the same thing. Like, we call good cop, bad cop in the house that, but it's not the same thing at all. Because in that case, it's two people pretending and playing a role to ensure, you know, a united outcome that they both want.
Correct.
And good cop, bad cop, here's what it means to me in the house. We'll see if you have the same definition. To me, good cop, bad cop in the house means one, the bad cop is the parent who's like, no, it's bedtime. 8:15 is bedtime. And good cop is like, oh, come on. I know it's a school night, but oh, come on. Oh, please. Can't they just stay up a little bit later? That's good cop, bad cop. Or like, how would you define it?
It's not trying to elicit a confession, which is what good cop, bad cop is trying to do. It doesn't have that same role.
And it's not working together. And it's working across purposes.
No, you're not a team. That's a good point, Amy. I like it. You're giving me a revelation right out of the gate. That's right. Like, it's not at all what good cop, bad cop actually is. It's one, we're saying basically like one parent is fun parent and the other parent is disciplined parent.
Right. There is another meaning, which could be, I found a study that was for adolescents who are type 1 diabetics, which requires, you know, great adherence to medication and oversight, I guess, for good outcomes. Mm-hmm. And that adolescents, as they enter, you know, adolescence, their adherence to treatment can start to go down to all kinds of things, not just diabetes. But this study found that in houses where there was good cop, bad cop parenting, that there was more likely to be reduced adherence to treatment. But the study used good cop, bad cop to mean good cop is like, you know, supportive and loving, and bad cop is the great Santini, to use an old Deluxe Alert.
Back in my day. What? Amy, even for me, I've got to call you on that old Deluxe Alert. My goodness, Amy.
The Great Santini is a movie based on a novel by Pat Conroy about his childhood. His dad, I guess, called himself the Great Santini.
Yeah.
And there's a scene in it that where Robert Duvall plays the dad and he bounces a basketball off his kid's head. That's all I got for you from the Great Santini. I'll pull a clip.
The Great Santini is all bad cop all the time.
Yeah.
And then the mom is just frightened cop, basically. There's no good cop.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think that we're talking about that, right? Good cop is loving parent and bad cop is awful parent. I don't think those need to be called good cop, bad cop.
No, I'll give you an example from my brother's life.
Okay.
Which they laugh about all the time, which was they have a group that they call the five families and they go on vacation together. They're like the preschool families. They all became friends and they're still, now the kids are grown.
Right. They all are still friends. That's sweet.
And so they still do stuff together, but they always called themselves the five families. And it was like they would go on vacation together. And between the five families, let's say there's 15 kids, right? And so they would be at some giant lake thing, you know, the 10 adults and the 15 kids. And then it would become bedtime. And the kids were all roughly the same age. And then there was a very specific order of which parent went up at which time to tell the kids to go to bed. And that order went from goodest cop to baddest cop. And the idea was that one of the dads, who they called the closer, like you didn't want the closer to come upstairs.
The kids didn't want his footfalls on the steps.
No, like they knew that basically like how close to the countdown they were to the closer coming upstairs and they didn't want it. And so that's like a good cop, bad cop thing. Like that one of the moms probably would come up early and be like, okay, sweet dreamers, off to dreamland with you, my little angels. Tomorrow is going to be full of fun, but it's time to get your little eyes rested. And then she would leave. And then the next mom would be like, okay, guys, I know this is great, but it's really time to wind up. But like by the time the closer came out, it was like, you will never enjoy your lives again. You will be locked in these rooms forever. The closer you want to stay away from. There's a role for that.
Yeah, that's me. Like the third time I have to interrupt a sleepover because they woke me up, you know, like that's like, I lower the boom.
Well, we've recently, because of, you know, things opening up and older people getting vaccinated, we've had the great joy of having some visiting family in town for the first time, people we haven't seen in 14 months. And I realized that like my role when, especially when like fun families in town, is like I am the fun killer and I really don't have any problem with it. It's like, oh, let's go up. It's tuck-in time. And I'm like, I'm looking at the clock. Everyone be quiet. Not fun anymore. Like, I don't care what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I am the fun killer and I don't care. I'm here to kill the fun.
The bad cop in this equation is like the good rules enforcer, like on the side of law and order.
Yeah, I'm law and order.
You're not bad at doing it. You're enforcing law and order very well, which makes you a bad cop in the eyes of like the kid, I guess.
My dad had a poem that he would recite to us.
Oh, yeah. Give me this poem.
It was the bad cop of poetry. It was like if this poem started, we would just be tortured. So when we were fighting, if we got to a point where like he really wanted to end, he would recite this poem. Whatever brawls disturb the street, there should be peace at home. Where sisters fall and brothers meet, sorrows should never come. Birds in their little nests agree, it is a shameful sight when children of one family fall out and chide and fight. That was the poem. And we hated this poem.
It just annoyed you? It was like nails on a chalkboard or was it scary?
It was nails on a chalkboard. Okay. Like the moment he would start it, I don't know why, it was our kryptonite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like spraying dogs with a hose. It was like turning on the noise that, you know, only dogs can hear. Like we would just go insane.
And you had a new common enemy, which was like you're the bad cop with the poem.
The poem, like it did shut it down. It was like a kill switch, basically. He would just pull the kill switch.
I mean, that's genius. I need to get like a laminated card. We should make those available on our website of this poem to just like, let's all try like pulling this out the next time the kids are fighting. Because it's baffling.
I don't know if it would work. I don't know if it only particularly annoyed us, but what, I mean, and it sounds like we were all joking around, but we would roll around on the ground and cover our ears and be like, please stop. So it was horrible, but it was a kill switch. I think it's like someone's got to shut it down.
Bad cop is in good at enforcing stuff, and good cop in this description means actually a bad at enforcing rules. Good, more ice cream, it means.
I started this to say that my children's version of this mm-hmm. is where I was going with that. It's fun to have fun, but you've got to know how, Dr. Seuss. And it is the thing that I say all the time right now in my house, especially at the end of the pandemic. We've been too much together. The kid who's like, if jumping out at someone is funny, jumping on that person is funnier. Jumping on that person and punching them in the face is even funnier. And then jumping on that person and punching them in the face until they start to cry is funniest. Trying to help him find the line of like, it's not funny anymore. It's fun to have fun, but you've got to know how.
Are you more of the enforcer? Are you the bad cop in your parenting dynamic? Does this parenting dynamic exist for you guys?
100,050,000%. Yes.
So my kids are older. I have three teenagers, 13, 16, and 18. So there's less of the, you know, like, I go to bed before my kids, except for the 13-year-old. 13-year-old, I get her to bed so that I can go to bed. The 16 and 18-year-olds, it's like, go with God. I hope you go to sleep at some point. So there's less rule enforcing, especially during a pandemic when nobody's going anywhere. So the sort of teenager rule enforcing doesn't exist. But when they were little, I was around more. So I was the primary caregiver for sure. My spouse traveled a ton for work and would get home to see them before bed maybe twice a week. I think in that dynamic where there's a definitely a primary caregiver, it falls to that person usually to be the bad cop. Like how this played out in our house when my kids were little is I'd have them, you know, bathe, pajamas, like countdown to bedtime. Bedtime's in 7 minutes. I've been waiting for 13 hours. And then my husband would come through the door, you know, and be the tickle monster and throwing them in the air and whip them to a frenzy. Good time, Charlie.
Good time, Charlie. You call him. Yes, I definitely remember you being like, good time, Charlie gets to come home.
Then good time, Charlie comes in the door at like 7:51 p.m., right? Then I would be like, no, you guys, but okay, you have to go to bed. And that was self-serving to some degree. Like, I'm ready to be done, right? And they're ready to enjoy their other parent. And then he didn't give me a hard time. I was like, oh, come on, mom. Oh, can't they stay? He didn't pull that stuff at all.
It wasn't like, mom's such a drag because you would have murdered him.
Yeah, but I'm the primary caregiver, so I'm the killjoy. And so I feel like this often breaks down along gender lines because the primary caregiver thing often breaks down around gender lines, but I'm not sure I'm right about that.
I think it can be both. I also definitely know dynamics where the dad is like, cut that out. Like he's more Great Santini. I definitely know the Great Santini dads too. I mean, mm-hmm. not that they're actually abusive monsters, but I've definitely seen it as a dynamic. It's kind of like don't interrupt a happy person that like, the kids kind of start roughhousing, and then sometimes I feel like the male tends to be like, let's cut out got this. And it's like they kind of parachute in with the military voice, and it's suddenly like,
yes,
whoa, dude, like, don't stop killing the mosquito with like bazooka. Like, you're way too hot for the room. You're coming in way too hot. And that is something that's like a bad cop in a different way. The kind of pop up super scary cop. And it's like, dude,
yes,
we do not need to be at this level. I have a whole second theory about this. So we'll talk about it when we come back.
Margaret, exciting news. I am about to have a new baby nephew. And believe it or not, this will be my 13th nephew.
Amy, you're ready to give up your amateur status. You're a pro aunt at this point.
Our family has seen a lot of babies. And as soon as they start standing or walking, I send them all a whole lot of Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 don't have ordinary diaper tabs. Instead, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your newly mobile little one.
Pampers Cruisers 360 offer a gap-free fit that is up to 100% leak-proof, crucial once your baby is quite literally up and at 'em. And that gap-free fit helps prevent your baby from taking off their diaper, a habit you do not want them to get into.
You can say that again. And Pampers Cruisers 360 just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we even elaborate on the need for that, friends? For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
More and more, you hear about the importance of electrolytes as part of staying hydrated, because you need the sodium and the potassium, not just the water. And whether you're looking to hydrate during a workout, while traveling, or at the end of a long night, Sports Research Hydrate Electrolytes have got you covered with over 65 trace minerals, 7 essential vitamins, and coconut water powder.
Crisp and refreshing and without any sugar, this is hydration powered by Sports Research. They're little packets you can just grab and take with you to mix into your water bottle on the go. My favorite flavor so far, Amy, gotta be the cherry pomegranate.
Interesting. My high schooler likes the lemon lime, and she keeps a few handy in her backpack for days that she has practice after school. These electrolytes have the sodium and the potassium that you need to go with it in the optimal ratio for daily hydration.
Visit sportsresearch.com and use code WHATFRESH at checkout for 50% off your purchase of Hydrate.
That's Sports Research, SportsResearch, sportsresearch.com, and use code WHATFRESH for 50% off your Hydrate electrolytes order.
This is why I think this gets problematic. And especially in spending time with family, I find sometimes that everybody in the family gets to be like nurturey, fun time, like, oh, and aren't you this? And oh, let me listen to your problems for 4 hours. And I'm like, wrap it up. It's time for homework. But I find that when I get to doubt, as you were saying, like, I work all day and then good time Charlie gets in to come in to have fun and I still have to be the blah, blah, blah. This is such a story we tell them ourselves, and then we get very like,
yes,
righteous, and it feels good to be, you know, put upon in this very specific way. And it is the kind of thing, I think, where sometimes it is fine to have ice cream for dinner.
Right.
You know, but that if we're so busy in our story of like, I'm the one who has to say no to everything. And my husband kind of goes into what we call the tunnel. Like, he's a thinker. And so sometimes he's a little bit maybe dialed out. And the one thing I say to him often is, don't say no until you've thought about why you're saying no. You know, so when the kids are like, hey, can we go out and eat ice cream in the yard? He'll be like, no. And I think that would have eaten us half an hour and been really fun and stupid. Hey, can we sleep on the couch in the living room tonight? Watch those no's too a little bit, because sometimes when you're like, I'm the bad cop, I have to say no to everything.
Right. No is the default answer if the kids are asking a question.
No is the default answer. And then because it kind of feeds your story of like, I have to be the one too, that. Two sides of it. One, sometimes no is the wrong answer. I mean, I am the sheriff. You know what I mean? And sometimes when we're visiting the kids' grandparents or hanging out with other relatives who are like, I bought you 6 toys and I'm buying you whatever you want for lunch and it's a party all the time. And it's like, well, I have to be the one, I guess, who keeps the trains on the track. You keep the trains on the track 300 days of the year. And if you spend 65 days with people who are not on your same plan, it will have zero effect on outcomes.
I couldn't get past that when my babies were little. I mean, my babies were terrible sleepers. What people never understood, we'd get into the good cop, bad cop thing with like, oh, come on, let them stay up, right? And whoever is only visiting twice a year, it's like, I can let them stay up, but they will open their eyes at 5:45, you know, either way. And then I'm dealing with the cranky baby the entire day, the next day, because people outside the situation, I felt like I was like the watcher of the wall, you know, for the larger.
Yes. You were Hodor.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's complicated when then you're made to feel like a buzzkill when you know you're correct. And it's definitely not great if you have, which I never have, but if you have the other parent in that situation saying like, oh, well, I'd let you stay up, but mom says it's bedtime.
And I think it's often not, I mean, some people have it with the other parent, but people often have it with grandparents, right? Like, oh, mommy won't let you have this.
Yes.
So my take, which I realize is not for everybody, but I will offer it anyway, is that's fine. It is completely fine for me if the kids eat nothing but sugar for the 2 weeks they spent with their grandparents. It's not a battle I'm interested in fighting. And stay up late and go crazy and are cranky. And I'm like, yeah, well, this is what happens. This is why we don't run it this way.
But are you left holding the bag? Like, I would have a problem with being like, okay, sure. Nope, there are no rules. Fine, fine. Good cops rule. But then you're left like carrying the cranky children while everybody else goes to the beach, but the baby needs to go to down for the nap sooner because they stayed up too late. I always felt like I'm left holding the bag for these choices the next day.
I get that. We had a summer where my kids were visiting relatives and they were eating literally so much ice cream that one of my kids developed like a gastrointestinal problem.
Who knew?
And I was like, yeah, see, this is why we don't eat ice cream 4 times a day, because your butt is really not going to thank you for that at a certain point when you have had diarrhea for 2 days. It's not that you have to let it get to that point at every time, but I think fundamentally the problem with bad cop is that you feel like everyone gets to be fun except for me.
Yes.
And that is a story that doesn't necessarily need to be totally true.
Julia Austin is a freelance writer, and she wrote an article, I'll put the link in the show notes, laying out sort of all the different ways in which this can be not a problem, but it can become a little bit toxic between parents when this dynamic is playing out at home. And so anyway, she names a whole bunch, but one of them was, I read this and like, yes, that's it exactly, that the good cop gets to relax at events. And I can think of a particular party, you know, an example, like you get to a party and there's kids around and there's people. And my oldest son was just learning to walk, that maximum danger, sticking their finger in sockets and, you know, just doing anything. And there was a buffet and, you know, my husband had gotten this food and I said, can I go get my food? Watch the baby. Sure, no problem. I leave the room for 45 seconds and come back and find my toddler gingerly like stepping out into space on the first step of this rickety basement staircase that he was in no way able to navigate. And I grabbed him by the back of the shirt and caught him just in time. And my spouse was like having a beer over in the corner. When we got to events, it was his job to kick back and have a good time. And it was my job to, you know, monitoring with the diaper bag and not relaxing for a second.
True.
And I mean, I was mad that the kid almost hurt himself. He did not hurt himself. But it's also like you don't even get that the reason that you can relax is that I am so uptight every second. Like I'm literally enabling your beer, you know?
Well, that's right. You get to be labeled as the uptight one and everyone else gets to have fun.
Right. I don't have fun at events. Like, that's right, because you do get to have fun at events.
Yeah. My husband and I have worked out a system of point person. We usually make that decision before we go anywhere. I'm like, I'm going. It's my family. I want to visit with people. You're point person today.
Yeah.
And that definitely has helped us some. Okay, you're here to visit with your family. I'll run point. But I also think I lay gently in your path that the amount of anxiety that we bring to these situations is sometimes too much.
Right.
I know for myself, for example, we go to the lake and there's a boat that everyone likes to go out on and have fun. And I find myself on that boat to be the person who's like, there's another boat coming. This baby is sitting too close to the edge. It makes me extremely anxious to be on a boat with little kids. I don't like it. So I have stopped going on the boat and the kids come off the boat fine every time without my 300 suggestions about what's dangerous about having kids on a boat.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes I have to recognize that my slightly martyrish, I have to do everything thing is actually just me manifesting a tremendous amount of anxiety in a situation where it's not actually the most helpful.
Mm-hmm.
My looking around corner, it's like, you guys are just enjoying yourself, but this kid could fall off into the engine. And it's like, well, they could, but they're probably not going to. And like, we are kind of enjoying ourselves.
Yeah, that's a tough one for me. I like the idea of like, you can not go and keep the baby home and, you know, enjoy the baby's nap and read a book and wave to them when they come back, if that's really easier for everyone. Yeah.
You know, if you're managing a 3-2-1-year-old on the boat, maybe you do need to be in that mode. But I also think it's one of the many situations where you can want people to be as anxious as you are and as seeing around corners as you are, but they're not. So that way madness lies. Whenever you're in a situation of like, this would work if you were as diligent as I am about looking for danger, and you're saying that to your spouse who is not that way, it's not going to work out.
I think it's natural that these rules sort of develop, but then like, it can get complicated.
For sure.
Can I walk you through some of the other things that Julia Austin suggests? Because I thought there were some good ones.
Sure.
She's kind of anti-good cop, but we'll get anti-bad cop in the end. I mean, maybe you already have, right? Because nobody wants to, the bad cop is kind of the one nobody wants to be around. And like, then you feel sorry for yourself, but you understand why as well. She says that the good cop can become a problem when the good cop just comes in and takes over the fun moments and doesn't sort of hand the keys to the bad cop. Like when you are the one who's always, come on guys, we're leaving with this, you know, and you don't get to be the one who lets them have ice cream, who lets them open the present, who tells them they're getting a puppy. You know, the person who is the good cop in the relationship gets a little bit used to that. And when there's good news to share, fun times to be had, naturally sort of jumps in and takes over because that's their warm bath, right? That's where they're comfortable. But don't sort of include the bad cop in that. It's like, oh, here's where I come in. The good part is starting. This is me.
Right. Fun time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Time to pick out a movie, you know, instead of, you know, come on, let's all do this together. They will, you know, just sort of take over at those times. That makes sense. That sounds familiar.
For sure.
And then the kids start to want to spend more time with that parent, can start to favor that parent, the one who's going to let them do things.
Yeah.
You know, who's going to let them stay up late, who's not going to give them a hard time about things. And she says the bad cop feels pushed to the side, even though she's the reason these kids have been kept alive to see another day of snuggling or drawing.
Obviously, one group of people who struggles with this is people who are not co-parenting.
Yes.
People who have a good cop, some parent they share custody with.
Yes. Totally tricky.
And that, right. It's like, oh, let's go over to dad's where it's candy and movie and ice cream all night, and then come back to mom's who's like, oh my God, you have to do your paper and get this stuff done because you didn't do anything over the weekend. I have seen friends of mine go through this, and kids do understand this in the long run. Kids do see this picture correctly, but it takes a long time and that's hard.
They get later, you mean, that like, oh, the reason I got to do whatever I wanted to do at ex-parent's house is because Y parent's house was the one who was making sure I showed up for school on time?
Yeah, because my dad was kind of really immature and my mom was like really working hard.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like this is a long game thing and that your temptation to fix it in the moment by screaming in your kid's face, you only get to have fun with dad because he's a moron, is not the right way to go.
Right.
And that the long game is important on this stuff too. Really important. And that even if you are married, it's like, you know, dad can throw the baby 65 feet in the air. Mom knows the feeding schedule, you know, like your kids do kind of get that eventually, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's a common thing, don't you, in divorce, that the parent who spends less time with the kid in custody arrangements is less aware of when Little League starts this year. And so I think tries to develop a relationship and maintain relevancy and importance in their kid's life by being the time Charlie. Like, it's, I understand why it develops.
Even I was in a long distance relationship once, and one of the biggest problems with our relationship is we never addressed any problems because when we were together, we just wanted to have a good time, you know, so that it makes sense. It's not because people are terrible people. It's because, well, we only get this limited time together, so I don't want to spend that time being like, you really need to buckle down on your grades at school. Like, I want us to have a good time because our time together is limited, and that makes sense. And I think there's a really important aspect to this, so let's take a break. We'll be right back.
Hello, Hellions. You know we listen to a lot of podcasts that aren't our own, and today we want to tell you about a podcast that really speaks to us and will speak to any parent of a child with special education needs.
The podcast is called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Ortube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs.
The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. One of my kids has an IEP, and I found this podcast so validating and so helpful. I feel better equipped to advocate for my child's educational needs now.
This podcast is helpful for parents in many different situations, whether your child already has an IEP or you're just starting to wonder if they might need extra support in the classroom. Juliana has content for kids of all ages and for kids who are learning English as an additional language as well.
To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains.
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. With sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends, at Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.
In the family justice system, disputes involving children are considered especially confusing. These are their stories. Okay, tell me exactly what happened.
She took the iPad even though it was my turn.
But he put the iPad on and just walked away like he wasn't even playing with it.
Okay, well, I guess if you put the iPad down, then she's right that you gave up your turn. Give your sister back the iPad.
But I only put it down because I had to go to the bathroom.
No, wait, the bathroom is definitely an exception to the abandonment clause. Okay, give him back the iPad.
But Mom, he wasn't going to the bathroom. He went outside.
Wait, what? You were outside? Okay, give her back the iPad.
I just went outside to get my backpack from the car so I could do homework after screens, which is what you told me to do.
Okay, you know what? Give him the iPad.
Yes.
No, it's my turn.
Haha, you lose.
You know what? If you're going to be nasty about it, give her back the iPad.
What? This is so unfair. Give me that iPad.
This is so unfair.
You know what? No one gets the iPad. The iPad's going in the garbage. We're moving to the woods where there are no iPads. We're going to live off the grid forever. Toddler Justice, coming to you all day, every day, 7 days a week.
This is so stupid and unfair.
This is the kind of issue that for me comes down to, like, what is a constant and what is a variable? What is changeable about this and what is not changeable about this?
Okay.
Because the conflict lies in, like, I want my husband to be a person who worries about where the kids are going to camp 2 summers from now. That's not going to happen.
Or what happens Monday. That would also be good.
Or what happens Monday. But you know what I mean? Like, I think part of finding happiness in your life and especially your marriage is, what is a variable here? What can be changed? And I think one thing that can be changed is spaces and places. This has helped my husband so much in this. One of my kids is involved in scouting, and I have handed that over to my husband completely. And whether he wants to good cop it or bad cop it, this gets easier as your kids get older, because it's not just like, oh my God. The first 5 years of, oh my God, keep them alive at all costs. As they get older, I feel like my husband and I try to find entire arenas where we operate independently. Now, I will say there's a deadline coming up for a sleepaway camp that needs to be filed. I did put it in big red letters on the calendar, and I will remind him, like, that deadline's coming. But your two choices in that situation, my two choices in that situation are let him fail and be furious at him, or like offer some support, but basically let him handle it. And I choose the latter.
I'm going through this with, you know, one of my teenagers right now. I have a particularly sort of sparry relationship, and it has been suggested to us that we work on that by not having me always be the one, the keeper of the, did you remember this and did you do this? That my spouse needs to do more of that. And of course, the way the like workload in our relationship breaks down, it's me being like, did you tell him to do this, to do that? There's a form due Tuesday. Can you go tell?
You're like Tony Hale yes. from Veep. You know, you're just following around being like, this is who's coming up. This is her name. This is her job.
6:45, he has a Zoom call. Can you please tell?
Yes.
And so we're doing that. And that's not great either. I'm like, okay, I'm going to take a big step back. So we have something in this teenager's life that my husband is supposed to be totally taking over right now. Like, okay, you guys handle it. You let me know how it goes. And of course, it has made 0% progress over the last 2 months. And yeah, it's something I'm working with now. Like, as the bad cop rule keeper, can I just let this not happen at all? I'm not sure about that is the answer to that question, but I'm considering it.
And that's the question you should be asking yourself. I'm not able to handle my anxiety on a boat, so I just don't go.
Right.
And they have a much better time without me. But also, I think that we have to hold that responsibility of let me tease out. My husband has been handling breakfasts in our house. He does not feed the kids a breakfast that fits my 86 parenting books about what is a good breakfast for kids in the morning.
Would it go on Pinterest?
Oh my God. It would go on like breakfast of shame, basically. But it involves a protein, a fruit, and a carb, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But part of it is what is going to happen if I stop controlling every aspect of this kid's life? My fear is that like, he's going to this, it's going to that, and like tease that out all the way. How much do I care that my kids are having like a somewhat processed and not very variant breakfast in the morning? I don't care that much, I guess. You know, you can either control every single outcome or you can get to be the good cop sometimes, and you can't have both, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You got to kind of reckon with, okay, am I allowed to let go of outcomes? When my husband is in charge of sending my daughter off to school, she looks like an extra in Annie, like the 17th orphan who got forgotten, you know? But am I allowed to let go of my need to control that outcome? My daughter should look like a clean human being for school. Or do I want to get to be good cop sometimes? You know, like there's some of these things are a little bit mutually exclusive.
There's a difference between safety and, you know, was her hair brushed, right? And you're right. You need to look for those moments and hand that stuff over a little bit. And I liked what you said before about if it's your family's party and you're going, and you got the diaper bag and the baby, like have that conversation on the way there, not 45 minutes into the party under your breath. Like, can you watch him for 1 second? Because I haven't even, you know, like, don't wait until it gets to that point. State that stuff that's important to you when you can be calm about it and direct, and you have your parenting partner's full attention. Because if they are a good time, Charlie, once they get to the party, they're going to be in the middle of the conversation. Everybody wants to be around that person.
Yeah. And we just recently took a family trip for the first time since COVID. And my kids are now 12, 10, and 8. And we haven't done a family getaway. Like, we went to Boston to look around the city. That's like a different kind of trip than we almost ever do. But I realized like the last time I did it, they were 10, 8, and 6. And my husband, as I've said, he's a little bit of a Mr. Magoo. You know, he's kind of in his head a lot, you know? And so my fight with him is like, you're not even paying attention. And the kids could just walk into traffic and you're busy, you know, reading your brochure about the Ben Franklin's house or whatever. And he is sort of like, the kids are 8, 10, and 12. They're not going to walk into traffic. And I have to listen to that a little bit too, you know?
A little bit, yeah.
Like, okay, my justification that like, these kids could be killed by a meteor at any second. Like, I'm not always right because I'm on the side of safety, you know? Like, he can be right too.
I was going to say ages and stages, but it's like spaces and places, I guess, is what you're saying right here.
Spaces and places. And
you're right. And a 12-year-old is not a 2-year-old. You're right.
Yep.
If you're hardened into these rules, if you have over time become like the action figure hardened in amber that is always the worrier of all the things.
I have a friend. We were really young. My friend had a baby when we were really, really young. And we would just totally crack up at her mom because her mom would walk in. This is back in the day where you had a milk crate full of CDs on the wall, you know? And she's like, well, that milk crate could fall and the CDs could fall on the baby. And, you know, the door could slam and it could hit the baby. And we were always like, the TV could turn into a dragon and the dragon could breathe fire on the baby. Like, yes, you intrinsically have that mother's instinct to search for danger, but it doesn't make you always right.
Yeah.
I could tell you're not totally sold on that point.
Well, no, I'm just thinking about, like, how do you come to a decision with your other parent about how you're going to play this stuff? You need to parent as a team because in the end, the kid will pick up on it when when parents, you know, give them a hard time and one parent lets them do whatever they want, they are going to use that to their advantage, particularly when we're talking about like divorced parents, right? Like it's,
yes.
Even if you are co-parenting with a parent who is like this and be like, I'll let you do whatever you want. I'm sorry. That's what your mom was going to tell you. If you're dealing with that parent, like the way at this might be like in the long run, it is much better for certainly our child and both of us if we have pretty much the same rules at both houses, right? Like
for sure.
Parenting as a team, presenting a unified front is the goal. And so I'm thinking about how can you move the needle and parent as a team? But yeah, I guess I am a little resistant to like the solution being just worry less, mom. Stop worrying so much all the time.
It's definitely not, but I think it's both. I think it's saying like, these are my boundaries. This is how I want things done. This is how they will be done. But I think a healthy part of that process is being like, are my boundaries as reasonable as I think they are?
Mm-hmm.
Because I found myself on this Boston trip. Sometimes I always say, I always know I'm in trouble with my husband when I'm like, honey, comma, you idiot, comma, statement, you know? And I found myself a little on this trip of like, you're reading the map and the kid could just dive off the dock at any minute. And he was sort of like, why would a 12-year-old suddenly dive off a dock into Boston Harbor? Like what? Some of the things you're worried about in this space are not actually valid. We say this all the time because we have three kids. When we separate or when we're in motion, I always say to my husband, you've got two, I've got one. We use that language all the time. Like, you've got three, I've got none because I'm going to the bathroom.
Love that.
So that before we separate, it's like, who's in charge of who? I am a very anxious person and I just constantly find myself trying to work against it. That like, you guys were running in the aquarium and that's against the aquarium rules and how could you? And my husband's sort of like, it was kind of fun and it didn't really bother anyone, you know? And that's also sort of reasonable. So I find being the solution for me often means just checking in a little bit about whether or not my bad cop is a little out of control.
Yep. And that's the sort of parenting for an audience, right? Like, do the people in the aquarium think that your children are the best behaved children at the aquarium today or ever? Or is somebody like, those children are running, you know?
Right. But if your value, which both of us definitely have, it's a value for us that the people in the aquarium will sing the song for years to come of the best behaved children they ever met in an aquarium. They'll be like, I still remember it back in
how effortlessly
21. I met these kids in an aquarium and they never ran. That's not a value of my husband's, and that's fair.
You know, it makes me think that you can have the unified approach, but that there needs to be more shorthand around it. I'm coming back to like your dad's poem as being sort of the way through this. I have a friend who is one of 13 children.
Oh, God bless the mama.
This friend came over for dinner recently. He's a grown man, and he just like regaled my children with stories of being one of 13. And my favorite story that my friend tells is there'd be, you know, 13 of them sometimes at the table with the parents. You know, of course, as they got older, somebody had soccer practice or whatever. But if somebody did or said or started something, one of the 13 kids did something that wasn't supposed to be happening, the dad would point to them and he'd go, I have to see if I can whistle like this guy would whistle. He'd go, you do that. And it just was this, he'd do that. And then he'd point to the stairs. And that was, you're done, go upstairs. And it was arguable. And it was like, that's definitely like good cop, bad cop. And his dad was the bad cop. And his, you know, but that was the discipline in their house. That was like the whistle and the pointing to the stairs.
That's how I was growing up. My mom was full-time bad cop, but when my dad bad copped, man, you did not. It was scorched earth. It was Dracarys. It was like, when my dad brought out the bad cop, it was run for your lives.
Yeah, and I'm not saying we go back to a, you know, a place and time where children were actually afraid of their parents, but there is sort of a less hovering, less talking about it, right? Non-verbal. There's an approach here. Start reciting the weird poem.
Start reciting the weird poem.
There is an option that like, this is the signal and both parents are behind it, right? Like if you disagree, if you think that wasn't worth a whistle and being sent upstairs, you talk about it later, I guess. But there's less talking about
it. For sure. And I think we've solved it. But I do want to say before we wrap that we came in talking about good cop, bad cop. There's a lot of legitimacy to the idea of like, moms have to be the bad cop. It is not fair. Other people get to have a good time while we have to make sure everything's okay. Because I have been struggling with this a little bit myself and trying to find my way out of that story, I've spent a lot of the episode talking about like taking responsibility for your story and getting away from that. It doesn't mean to say that like it doesn't land on you. It's not fair. It's not fun to have to be the bad cop. And like, yes, moms get stuck in that role much more often. It's just in processing it today, I ended up, because of probably where I am at in my own marriage and parenting relationship right now, at a place of like, let me examine my role in this. But I don't mean to say to people out there, like, this is all your fault, because it's not.
But the reset is up to you. And the reset is probably best done, you know, offline with your spouse on the way to the party, not once you're already there, you know, with a glass of wine at night, not, you know, while the baby's crying.
And don't let yourself fall into like, it's always me, the martyr role, because that will stay unappealing to your family and children. Mm-hmm. I know how to have fun, but I'm also not going to let my boundaries be messed with. Your kids will see in the long game that you were like, you were on point.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of my friends I've seen that happen with. Like, good time Charlie dad, guess what? People grow up and they're like, oh, dad was kind of a goofball and mom really held it together. They'll see it.
Solved it.
They'll see it in the long run.
Solved it. I am going to put that poem in the show notes because I'm going to memorize it. I'm going to baffle my children.
Whatever burrows disturb the street. Yeah, I mean, try it out. It's horrifying. I don't know why. It's total nails on a chalkboard. Friends, today we want to ask you to rate our podcast. Go out. Tell people what you think of it. Go to Apple Podcasts, rate and review.
Yeah, or wherever you're listening, you can rate and review.
Wherever you listen, there should be rating, because we need to keep spreading the word about podcasts and we need your help with that. So find somewhere to rate and review the podcast. Go off and be your good cop or your bad cop self.
We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening.
Margaret, it's an exciting news day.
An exciting news day indeed, Amy.
A few years ago, we launched our first spinoff podcast, Toddler Purgatory, hosted by the hilarious Blair Brooks and Molly Lloyd.
And guess what? Now Blair and Molly are back with their all-new podcast, Unsticking It.
You know Blair and Molly as two busy moms and actors. And somewhere between potty training and the pandemic, they both felt like they lost their creative kaboom.
In their new podcast, Unsticking It, they are going to talk about how all of us can get back to what lights us up after motherhood. Amy, I need this.
Me too. And Blair and Molly will be talking to fellow imaginative minds. We're talking actors, artists, and creators of all kinds about how we can all unstick ourselves from whatever muck we're stuck in.
Follow, subscribe, and listen to Unsticking It wherever you get your podcasts.
That's Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.